Blog. Questions of a moral. And Jesus was a working man. Jesus was a working man. He had muscles of steel and callous hands. Always had a master plan. Yeah, Jesus was a working man. Jesus was a working man. He had muscles of steel and callous hands. He played in a rock and roll band. Yeah, Jesus was a working man. Jesus was a rocking man. Jesus was a working man.
Good morning and a very, very cold, warm welcome to everybody in the chat room. Thanks for tuning in again today to our weekly Wednesday virtual discussion session here on the Cosmic Citizen. I'm Kevin Adams here along with my co-host, Ann Garner.
Good morning, Kevin, and I want to say welcome to live broadcasting because that is not what was queued up to play, but that's mighty fine. That's our
yes,
favorite.
It is right. I did hear something a little different there in the background.
It's interesting, but that's okay because that's a great song.
So I hope everybody had a very nice, happy Valentine's Day, and I hope you're nice and warm and toasty where you are because where I'm at, it's absolutely cold and freezing today here over in Tokyo. It's like -5 degrees. So I hope you're really nice and warm. Anyway, thanks for tuning in for today's show. We have a really good show lined up for you today. On the show, actually, we have a person here. His name is Mr. Yasuhiko Ginku Kimura. Again, his name is Yasuhiko Ginku Kimura. He's actually a mystic author. He's a lecturer. He's an integral philosopher, and he's also the founder and he's the chairman of Vision and Action Organization, which helps leaders and business, science, and cultural organizations to move beyond compartmentalized thinking that inhibits success. So I would like to welcome him to the show today, and we're going to be discussing a lot of things, a lot of different aspects of his organization that he works for, and, well, I'll turn the show over to him, and I'll give him the floor. So, Ray, please give him a very, very warm welcome to Mr. Yasuhiko Kimura.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good morning.
Good morning, Anne.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, here in New York, it is still cold, but not as cold as Yokohama. And I'm looking at the Pacific, Atlantic Ocean from my office, and beautiful sunny day.
Beautiful, yes. We have sunshine here in Texas, so that's wonderful. Well, I came across you quite serendipitously by Facebook, and I love Facebook. And as I've written, I immediately recognized a visionary. And I have a term for it. I say it's those who get the information, the revelation, in a download. And it's very obvious to me that you're an astute student of ancient writings, but it's also very obvious that you get it just simply downloaded because your concepts, your ideas, Kevin, you commented the very deep concepts, and I came back and deep calls to deep. And that reminds me of some of the great writers, Mark Twain in particular. Deep calls to deep. The Mississippi calling to the depths. The ocean calling to the depths. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your kind words.
And Kevin, you said you had a lot of questions, so you go. Is Kevin still with us? Sometimes his phone cuts out because he calls on Skype. Oh, my goodness. Well, that's the dynamics of live broadcasting, right? Kevin? Maybe he'll call back in. Well, we'll just take it from here. I read with great interest your letter to the history makers. When did you write that?
It was written originally in 1996, and it was, slightly edited for publications twice. So it was originally my audience was my students and clients.
Well, the three words that hit me in the right at the beginning was listen, respect, and learn, which equates to dialogue. I hear people talk about debate. I like the word dialogue because you're calling to the essence of people's, the higher essence of people on this planet. Can you paraphrase that?
Well, let me give you a little bit of background. When I was young, two things happened to me in my life. Actually, I was very young, like 15, 16. One was, what you can call a spiritual illumination experience, where I experienced the divine presence. And also, although I was a very good student in school, I realized that I wasn't really thinking. Being good student means that you have a good memory and you know how to apply what you memorize. There was no thinking involved. And in Japan at that time, Japanese education was known to be very good, but I didn't think it was that good at all because it was just simple, repetition of what you read in the books. And I begin to realize that, thinking is missing. And people also unconscious of, their own destiny. So ever since then, I have been in search of, way to impart that experience that I had.
Mm.
And at the same time, not by way of, believing some authorities, but real self-inquiry, which requires thinking. So I was a Buddhist priest for a number of years in Zen Buddhist order.
How many years were you?
About 5 years.
Uh-huh. What age did you?
From 18 to 23.
So after that, and I read about that powerful experience, and I opened up and talked about one experience I had, and it's hard to explain, isn't it? It's hard to explain.
Yes. It's actually, become clear. You become clear what is real and what is not real, and when there's a, you can say there's a dimension of reality and dimension of appearance. When people take appearance to be real, then that appearance become illusion. And the hallmark of reality is that it is eternal, immutable, never change. And hallmark of appearance, it ongoingly changes, appear and disappear, appear and disappear. And there are two dimensions. Fundamentally, there are many more subtle distinctions within them, but fundamentally, what is real and what is an appearance.
Okay, so and there's two dimensions.
Yeah, fundamentally, reality and appearance. And appearance is a dimension. In English, it's called phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
The term phenomenon in Greek means lighting up.
Mm-hmm.
So, things light up, light up, light up, light up, light up. So appear, disappear, appear, disappear, appear, disappear. And ongoing change takes place, totally impermanent. That is the dimension of life with which most people identify. And they take that to be real. And when appearance is taken to be real, then it turns into illusion. So Maya is not originally meant, to be illusion, but it becomes synonymous with illusion because people take appearance to be real. So when you have that illuminating experience, one becomes clear as to what is real and what is unreal. and begin to be in the dimension of reality and begin to play in the dimension of appearance. So
you begin to play in the
dimension of appearance. So
I like that word. You begin to play.
Yeah, it is. So purpose of human life is to be in reality, and then you engage in the dimension of becoming an appearance as a form of play, the creative expression of your divine intelligence. So, but this requires, most of the religion, the religious philosophy that you study, based on people believing in it. Somebody say something, some enlightened masters or Jesus Christ or whosoever say anything, they may be coming from genuine understanding. But unless the other person, the listener, has the same experience, that is simply a belief. And I'm interested in people having actual experience, and actual knowing, actual understanding. And that requires the person to be in a mode of inquiry and dialogue.
Inquiry,
mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mode of inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
And really a mode of discovery for himself and herself. And so in my writings, in my teachings, in my courses, I emphasize thinking. And people who study Buddhism, Zen in particular, superficially, they think that Buddhism is in, Zen is into non-thinking and non-thought. But that is not really true. When you study Zen deeply, they don't deny any real thinking. They actually deny or make you aware the two dimensions or two kinds of what we call thought. And one is the thought you have, or the thought that have you, that when you are in meditating, there's an ongoing chatter, a thought going through your mind. And if it is your mind, if it is your thought, you can start and stop, but somehow it doesn't stop because it is not your thought. It is like just a vibration going through your mind. And there is another kind of thinking which actually originates in you. And Zen Master Dogen, calls this Hishiryo, which is thinking beyond thinking, or thinking itself. It is not like a shuffling information that most people do, but it is true thinking, true creative thinking, authentic thinking that arises from you. And what Zen and Buddhism try to convey through their teaching is to get to that dimension of thinking where you become at one with the creativity of the universe. And you think. You don't shuffle information that you have learned from others. And you don't believe in anybody. You know, and you think, and you feel, and you will. And that is the authentic way of being, authentic way of living, and authentic way of thinking. And that is what Buddhism teaches, and that is what I teach. And that is what authentic masters of different schools actually teach. So I emphasize that thinking. I emphasize that inner authority, not the external authority. And I emphasize the inquiry, self-inquiry, and dialogue takes place amongst those people who are really thinking and inquiring within themselves. Then dialogue becomes very alive. Then you bring into the table your own insight, and then I listen to this. And in this way, something that you could not accomplish by yourself can be accomplished because wisdom of others are actually are helping you to go deeper into your own inquiry. So in that sense, yes, you know, I emphasize dialogue, and most of my seminars are not me giving lectures, but, you know, interactive, and I ask people a lot of questions, and we think together. By thinking together, you go to the source of thinking, and source of thinking is who you are.
Yes, Kevin is back with us, by the way. He got disconnected, but
yes.
I think it, when you're saying that, I think of some of your terms you said, by this dialogue, through this mutual dialogue and interchange of ideas and concepts, we co-create our future.
Exactly.
And that's very powerful.
And, you know, dialogue is, you know, the word synergy has been overused and misused, but it is a wonderful concept. And, you know, Buckminster Fuller defines synergy as the behavior of a whole system that is unpredicted by the behaviors of its subsystems, taken apart from the whole and observed apart from the whole, which means when people come together in a synergetic unity, what will come out of that dialogue is completely unpredictable. So it will be unknown to everybody. So, you know, you have set of insight and understanding, and you have a set of questions, and you bring that to the table, and, you know, other people do the same. In that process, something that you cannot come up with by yourself, or it may take a long, long time for you to do, can come up because of that, you know, dynamics of synergy. Something unpredictable, that some unknown shows up and revealed to you. So if dialogue is conducted, you know, properly, it's very, very powerful. So, you know, my programs are basically dialogical. You know, I ask people questions. Even if I answer questions, that answer is also is in the form of a question. People, again, you know, have to ask that question themselves. And eventually, people actually discover truth and reality for themselves, not because I say something, but because of that space that is created, that they self-discover within that space. So that is, you know, what I do and I'm interested doing.
I like that word space, because you talk about, you use the word space when you are discussing meditation.
Yes.
Meditation can be, it's an interesting experience for me. I don't know, you haven't, we've never talked before. I've often said, I am a Christian minister. I'm an ordained Christian minister.
Mm-hmm.
My experience with meditation ongoing is with Buddhist monks for years and years. These are Theravadins. It's a different and very powerful experience.
Yes.
And my worship experience, of course, in Christianity, also with Sikhism, you know, many consider to be the youngest world religion. Of course, there's others, Baha'is, you know, but young meaning about 500 years.
Mm-hmm.
Would you go into that space and help us understand, because there's a term that I've heard many people say when they go into meditation, the stillness, the quiet, the monkeys, you know, the monkey mind. And what I heard you say earlier kind of takes that load off of us about the monkey mind.
Yes. Well, you know, meditation, you know, there are many different so-called meditation techniques. You know, when I was in India, I studied 112 of them and tried them all.
112, did you say?
Yeah, it is 112 methods of meditation from Tibetan Buddhism. But anyway, when you look at them, you know, as a whole, there's an underlying method or structure. So in a normal course of, you know, being conscious, which is, you know, we are normally, you know, awake, physically awake, and we are conscious. And when you are conscious, you are always conscious of something. Yes.
Right.
So right now I'm in my study, you know, from my window I can see the ocean and the homes, you know, around our home, and everything physically, you know, visible. I am also conscious of your voice and my own voice and many other things that I'm conscious. And also, you know, you and I are conscious of the conversation we're having so that, you know, you understand what I'm saying and vice versa. So we are conscious of something, and those somethings are the object of our consciousness.
Mm.
Now, when we meditate, what you do is this. So when you are conscious of something, you are not the conscious of the consciousness that is conscious of something. Consciousness that is conscious of something is always hidden from its own purview. And when you want to become conscious of consciousness, you objectify that consciousness to be able to observe. So observer, the consciousness, always remain hidden from the observer himself.
Mm.
Meditation is the art or technology of turning the light of awareness around and then toward itself to the source, so that consciousness becomes conscious of itself without objectifying itself. And that is the, you know, movement. And some people would say it is not possible for consciousness to become conscious of itself without objectifying it, because they are used to the mode of consciousness in which they are conscious of something, and something is not the consciousness itself. But it is possible, and that's what happens. You know, enlightenment experience happens when consciousness becomes conscious of itself. And then everything that are content of consciousness become illuminated in the light of that awareness that only takes place when consciousness is conscious of itself. Then, you know, subject and object actually disappear, because when there is no object, there's no subject. So it is the consciousness just being itself, being at one with itself. And that is, what is called enlightenment or meditation. And all the meditation techniques are designed so that eventually that mode of awareness in which consciousness is conscious of itself start to manifest, realize itself in people's consciousness. As all of the meditations are designed for this purpose. And so that is meditation. When you are in that, you know, going toward your, you know, source of your awareness, when your consciousness is becoming at one with itself, thought, what people sometimes disparagingly call monkey mind, maybe still, functioning, and there are thoughts going through your mind, and you don't need to stop them. You just don't let them get in your way,
right,
of returning to the source.
Mm.
Yes. So it's like, you know, it's the thought, that thought, you know, not your thought, but the thought, ongoingly there, because there's vibrations going on in your mind, which shows up as some kind of brain waves. So it goes on and on, and if you start to listen to this, that's when, and when you start to try to stop them, that's when you give more energy to that waves and vibrations. But if you don't pay attention to them, let them be, and you focus on actually returning to your own source of awareness, then eventually they will stop without you trying to stop them. And that is what happens in meditation. You know, Zen meditation is more, you know, purely describing something like this. But, you know, they don't really talk about returning this light of awareness toward itself so much. So when I explain to people what meditation is, I emphasize that aspect of it.
Do you recommend forms of music, chanting to help the mind get into what the term I'll use, and this is from the Urantia book, the contactual tones of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
That I know for me personally, yes, I love the silence. I love to walk in nature with our dog, and my husband and I, we enjoyed this experience of just being in that stillness. And the group experience of meditation and worship, which worship for me is different. Worship is a form of, for me, to communion, and there's a subtle difference there. I'm just wondering, do you relate to that at all?
You know, meditation itself is, you know, synonymous with enlightenment.
Right.
When consciousness is conscious of itself, consciousness is meditating and it is becoming illuminated.
Hmm.
Therefore, all the meditation techniques are designed to bring you to the point of meditation. And when a person does one particular meditation techniques over and over again, it can become very habitual. And when, you know, you become habituated in something, your awareness becomes dull. So it is important that, you know, you do different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what is most important is not what meditation technique you use, but, you know, you want to remind yourself to remain meditative throughout the day. Meditative. And then when you sit down and do meditation, you know, sometimes, you know, it is spring and summer, I go outside and just, you know, sit in front of the ocean or inlet. And sometimes, you know, I love, you know, classical music and I listen to music. Those people, I'm not into chanting personally, but, you know, if, you know, it helps people, you know, by all means do the chanting. However, chanting can, you know, make you, not aware. Sometimes
right.
Chanting can be make you actually dull. So
make
you have to
what?
Be very careful.
What was the word you used, meditation?
Dull, D-U-L-L.
Dull, oh,
yeah.
Chanting.
Yeah,
yeah,
so you see, you need to, you know, it's like a numb the mind, you know, the
mm-hmm.
awareness and the enlightenment is the peak of sharpness, not the dullness.
Mm-hmm.
And chanting can make people dull. So you have to be careful. I'm not denying chanting by all means. You know, you can employ chanting, you can do this, but fundamentally, you know, if you are aware of what meditation is, then you want to do things meditatively. So in that context, chanting, listening to music, and something like a Sufi dancing, or even just regular dancing, there are many, many things that you can do to put yourself in the space of meditation. But, you know, my students practice one particular meditation, and then depending on the person and depending on the time, I tell them to do other things. And so in this way, you know, you remain more, you know, dynamic and aware. Mm-hmm.
That's important. And that may be why I've ended up enjoying the different experiences of the different religions.
Exactly.
I thoroughly enjoy it in any given week. You will find
yeah.
me in these different experiences.
Yes.
It brings joy.
You know,
Kevin,
and...
Kevin, we hear you now. You're back with us? He's dropped off three times.
Yes, am I here? Can you hear me?
Yes, very clearly.
Now we hear you.
Oh, okay. I keep getting dropped for some reason. I'm coming through Skype, and it keeps dropping me, and I keep coming back on. Every time I come back on, then it boots me off again. So, I've been listening the whole time. But, yeah, I can hear you. But, yeah, is my voice okay? Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay, okay. Please continue. Sorry. Well, actually, in a minute, we do have a
special
caller.
With, He's not here with us, Kevin, so just keep moving. I don't hear him.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I'm sorry. Well, then, yeah, please
we're enjoying
continue.
This. And so you
know, Kevin, you live in Yokohama.
Yeah.
And in Yokohama, there is a one of the largest Zen Buddhist monastery, Sojiji. Tsurumi, Yokohama, there is a, you know, big monastery there. Do you know that?
Oh, that's where I live. I'm at Tsurumi.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I live.
Yes. So, you have an opportunity to experience traditional Buddhism, Zen Buddhism, if you just go there for a couple of days.
Well, I'm going to have to find a Zen center here. I've never experienced. Isn't that interesting? Unless
yes.
you just decide to, like I said earlier, before we went on the air, we just need you to come to Dallas, right? And teach
yeah, actually,
yeah.
a number of years ago, before I found the Urantia book, of course, in the United States, I did study a type of Buddhism that we have there. Actually, I used to belong to a Buddhist group. Probably you know it very well. It's called Soka Gakkai.
Well, Soka Gakkai is another Zen. It is a popular form of, Nichiren school of Zen, Buddhism. Yes, it is very popular in Japan and in the U.S. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So for many years, of course, we used to chant. Of course, we had this... chant that we would chant all the time. We used to chant Nam Myoho Renge Kyo.
Yes.
Which of course means actually to actualize the mystic law that operates throughout the universe. Basically in English, so everybody can understand what I'm talking about. basically it meant by chanting that phrase Nam Myoho Renge Kyo, we could put ourselves into being at the right place at the right time to receive the right benefits from the universe all around us. So,
well, you know, Nammyo Myoho Renge Kyo is a name of a scripture commonly known as Lotus Sutra. And Nam is a Japanese transliteration of Sanskrit, which means to surrender. So you give yourself to the truth that is contained in this Lotus Sutra. And so your translation is, paraphrasing the meaning, and which is, I think, is very good. You see, unless, you receive a truth, to the degree that you are ready. And so what, this right moment and right time, what it implies is that, when you cultivate inner readiness to receive truth, cosmic truth, then to the degree to which you are ready, you receive the teaching, or truth, or dharma, that is appropriate for your spiritual growth. And the teaching that is given to you at the moment when you are ready to receive contains all of the truth, yet there's a degree of degree of profundity that is appropriate for the level of your own development. So what is important is ongoingly, cultivate this inner readiness to receive truth. And so you only receive the right teaching, right in the sense of appropriate, when you are ready to receive it.
Right.
Yeah.
We do have a question from someone here in the chat room. I'm looking at the board right now.
Yeah.
The question is what does Zen mean as modifying Buddhism?
Okay, Zen is a Japanese word, which is a Chinese word Chan, And the Chinese word Chan is a transliteration of a Sanskrit term Dhyan. And Dhyan usually is translated as meditation. But when you look at the meaning of the term, it's more like a process of stabilizing mind. So Zen is the name given by others describing the school of teaching in Buddhism that emphasizes meditation. So people look at, you know, those Zen monks meditating, and they say meditation is the path to enlightenment. So they say, oh, this is Zen school. So it is a name given by others to describe a particular school of Buddhism whose teaching is meditation only. So the term Zen is a sounds only in that sense. You know, it's Dhyan, meditation become Chan in Chinese and then Zen in Japanese. So it means meditation or stabilization of mind. And also Chinese characters, you know, used for Zen has meaning. You see, so there are many, many words that can actually transliterate Sanskrit term Dhyan into Chinese, but they chose particular character to signify something. And that particular character, Zen, means to demonstration of simplicity. And also, it also means a giving of the robe of a master to the disciple when the disciple becomes enlightened. So it's like you acknowledge that you are the, you know, the master acknowledges you as his successor, and then you give the robe to the disciple who is your successor. Then that act of giving the robe is also means Zen. So Zen has Chinese character. Zen has these two meanings of giving the robe from the master to the disciple as acknowledgement of the disciple being enlightened and being a successor to the master, and also the character Zen also means the demonstration of simplicity. So original transliteration, sounds only translation, by using a particular character, start to have a new meaning, and so that is Zen. And Zen Buddhism emphasizes more than any other Buddhist schools the meditation. There are many Buddhist schools, and some Buddhist schools emphasize on reading scriptures, some emphasize on chanting, some emphasizes, you know, praying, some emphasizing, you know, good action. But Zen almost exclusively emphasize doing meditation. So when you are in Zen monastery, you know, from the months of, let's say, May, June, July, and October, November, December, 3 months, you are really focused on meditation. And the first 1 week of each of those six months, you actually meditate 11, 12 hours a day. And also Zen, it was actually, there was really no Zen in India when Buddhism was, you know, originated. And Zen is a very unique Buddhist school in that it actually blossomed in China. So you can say Zen came from China because it is the integration of Indian Buddhism and Chinese Taoism into a unified spiritual teaching. So Zen is, in that sense, it is a combination of Indian Buddhism and Chinese Taoism. So it has a lot of, you know, Taoist element. At the same time, the Zen, once it was formed, it began to influence Taoism also. So there was, you know, interchange between the two.
I like what you said about the passing of the passing the robe.
Yeah.
In Judaism and Christianity, it's referred to as the mantle, the robe,
mm-hmm.
and that's an experience that I had. Many people have, and I haven't gone into details about my ordination.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that happened to me. It was recognized
mm-hmm.
by several,
mm-hmm.
but especially one in particular. And I know exactly the moment it happened, and I know, you know, it's a very real experience.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of Judeo-Christianity, I loved your article about blessed are the peacemakers.
Mm.
That was beautiful. You brought in the Beatitudes from Jesus.
Yes. Yes.
And that was quite lovely, and just so much was there. Because you give a lot of respect, and a lot of your Rancho book readers come from a Judeo-Christianity background.
Mm-hmm.
And as time goes by, we're experiencing more and more people of different traditions. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all, as years go by. And in saying that, we have a very wonderful friend of mine who's come on the air with us, beautiful voice, tenor. Bob, are you there?
I am here, Ann.
Wonderful. Well, welcome to the broadcast. And what we do is we have an interlude, and we either have poetry or now we have some singing. And I requested Bob. Bob has a Christian, strong Christian background, and there's a beautiful song that's actually not a Christian song. I just personally like it because it's connecting all of us together around the planet as friends, as family, as the one in concert. And it's called Bridge Over Troubled Waters. Bob, you ready?
Yeah, I'll try to get her cranked up here. Morning voice is not the best.
He's in California.
Yes, I'm in the weird part of the world here. Okay, hold on here. I actually have music with this, Ann.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, let's see if this will work.
I think my southern accent said Judeo. They're teasing me about my southern accent in the chat room. The Jewish faith is what I was trying.
Here we go. When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, I'll dry them all. I'm on your side. When times get rough and friends just can't be found, like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down, like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down. Down and out, when you're on the street, when evening falls so hard, I will comfort you. I'll take your part when darkness comes and pain is all around, like a bridge over troubles. troubled water, I will lay me down like a bridge over troubled water. I will lay me down. Sail on, silver girl. Sail on by, your time has come to shine. All your dreams are on their way. See how they shine. Oh, if you need a friend, I'm sailing right behind, like a bridge over troubled water. I will ease your mind, like a bridge over troubled water. I will ease your mind. Well, that's it.
Thank you. Do you know, this is one of my favorite songs, and when I go to karaoke bar with my friends, it's one of those songs I sing myself. Not as good as Bob, but it's a wonderful song. Huh?
Uh-huh. Oh, that's
yeah,
beautiful.
Very uplifting.
Thank you, Bob. That's a beautiful way to start the day here. And for you, for it to be so early there, and that's just remarkable. We've been learning and dialoguing a lot here about Zen Buddhism, Bob. I don't know how much of it you've been able to listen to, but it's been quite remarkable.
I've been interested in those disciplines and those philosophies, those ideas. There's a lot to be said for all areas of truth, everything that has an effect upon the human spirit. It makes us introspect. Let us look at ourselves and one another's in a different light. So I'm toward that. I'm always the first to say I wish I had more accomplishment, but I think our intentions. It's the intention. We have to be intending to push ourselves forward, and I'm excited for this time on this earth. What did they say? On this planet at such a time.
Yes, what an adventure.
Ah, yes, an adventure. Yes,
well, saying
yes,
that,
yes.
I want to step back to our special guest.
Yes.
What would you speak to us? What would, as far as a word for today, a word for the future, to call us into a moment of to be about, to be in manifesting and co-creating for the planet, for the future?
Well, you know, we do live in a very exciting time. And at the same time, it is a very turbulent time. Lots of uncertainty exists today. And in many parts of the world, old system is dying. A new system has not arisen yet, or at least it is not in the state of establishment. so people are confused and uncertain. Some people are fearful. And the most gross manifest level, probably, you know, economy will continue to go down. The existing political system may collapse. There are a lot of things are happening. And it is important for people to realize that although there are unforeseen and unforeseeable forces at work in the universe, we have a great degree of power over our own destiny. So while we need to remain awake and aware and alert as to what is happening around us, we can actually responsibly actually continue to dance with what's going on in the world and continue to create our own destiny. And we can also continue to create, co-create our own joint co-destiny. So, how can I say this? Some spiritual people tend to disregard completely what's happening, and they go into their own world. That is not the way of awakened humans. It is important to remain internally illumined. At the same time, it is important to be informed and be aware of what is happening so that you can have an impact on the course of human destiny. So that is something that just occurred to me right now.
Mm. Well said.
That's so beautiful. And someone commented to me, I was remarking on some of your writings, and they said, well, I don't know. Can we really make a difference? Because there's so few that are awake on the planet. And my instant feedback there was, well, it doesn't matter how many, as long as there's just a few. In the, you know, we've got inside our world. Our world is where we are, and the impact we have is where we are right now. And these words are going out around the planet, throughout the universe,
mm-hmm.
and they're speaking light and power and co-creative power, and that's why it's so important. And the numbers will grow exponentially, don't you agree? And I just heard a prophetic voice going forth. I know when I hear a prophet. I know when
you
I
You know,
hear
today, in terms of the percentage of people who are awake, the percentage may not be that different from the past. However, share number of people... we have 6 billion plus humans living on this planet. Even if the percentage of people who are awake is the same, the number of people who are awake is pretty large, number one.
Oh, I like that. You're going with percentage rather than numbers.
Yeah, and number two, with the advent of internet and this global communication and the information, we are more in charge of our own destiny in the sense that, you know, you can communicate with large number of people, and you can be more informed than the people in the past. And when something happens, you can just, you know, gather together virtually, and that virtual gathering together can have a big impact. And as you said, you know, when with this technology, not only the percentage, but the number may actually exponentially increase. And so that is a very, you know, encouraging sign. But you see, what is important is, first of all, you know, it is you want to live your life in accordance with your own passion and vision and be happy and fulfilled at every moment. And only those who can live that way can make real difference. And so, you know, I call my approach, you know, transforming humanity one person at a time. And, to me, my presence makes a difference in one human being. Then, you know, the purpose of my life is fulfilled. You know, some people may have impact on millions of people. But, you know, just having one person being impacted by my presence, whatever I say or not say, if that happens, the purpose of my life is fulfilled. I don't want to go, you know, like a grandiose vision of transforming all the human beings on this planet. So, you know, I want to deal with each person, and the person in front of me, if something happens to this person as a result of being with me, that is very much, you know, satisfying. So first you transform yourself, and then, you know, begin to assist others in transforming one person at a time. And if you live long enough, maybe you can impact more than one person.
I like that.
Yes, and I do know that, you know, since I have, you know, been doing this 15, 20 years, people report to me that, you know, there was a significant difference in their lives, and that gives me a tremendous pleasure. And if one person makes a difference in one or two people, that will be a huge difference collectively. And many people who are into making big difference in many, many people are oftentimes I found them to be in their own ego trip.
Yeah. It's all about them. And,
oh, yeah, exactly.
Well, I know, I'm thinking of the article you wrote about, they asked you, are you a guru? And
yes.
You were very clear. You did accept the role as a spiritual teacher, but
mm-hmm.
I really encourage people to read and view your videos, because every day I'm enlightened, I'm encouraged, I'm inspired, and immensely grateful for you being one of the ones that accepted your role on this planet.
Thank you.
And Bob, I'm so thankful for you, and enjoyed so much what you and I exchanged last night. Yes, there are visitations on this planet. And Kevin, you stepping into the deep waters of co-hosting when you've only had the Urantia book about a year and a half, and you just okay, here we go. And so that is just awesome. And we're running out of time. Will you come back? Will you come back sometime and join us again?
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Wonderful.
We are all bridges over the troubled water.
That's right. Well, thank you so much. And we will end, Kevin, if it's okay with you, we'll end with our brother Pato, who is a reggae singer. So we'll end with him singing, let's see, we have here A New Day Dawning. That's very appropriate, isn't it?
Yes.
And have you noticed I have not tried to pronounce your first name, Mr. Kimura?
Yasuhiko. Yasuhiko Genku Kimura. Genku is my, you can say, pen name, a spiritual name. Yasuhiko is the name my parents gave me.
And what
Kimura
is
my
new
last
name?
Name.
What is
Yasuhiko
name?
Genku Kimura.
I love it. I'm just going to say goodbye from Anne.
Thank you.
I'll speak your name the next time. I love
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Kevin? Oh, did we lose Kevin again? Okay. Bye, y'all. God
Thank
bless.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
God bless.
And I can hear the angels calling. Oh yes, it is a new day dawning. It's gotta be universal love. Oh yes. yes, there